Sunday Lunch. Sunday Lunch with your favourite Essex boy, Tony Smith. Tony Smith. On Phoenix 98 FM.
Yeah, that will be me. I do love that jingle. And welcome to the studio, Rhys Williams.
Hello.
Did I say it right?
Rhys. Yeah, it's near enough.
What did I say? Yeah, because I was trying to think of the actor, the famous one that's on. Is he Welsh?
Which one?
Rhys.
There are a few Rhys. Oh, Rhys Evans. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I was trying to get in my mind.
No, you're good.
But luckily enough, he didn't come in. He was in that film where he just come in and he had those little white pants on. Yeah, luckily, you're not dressed like that.
Today. I have much more dignified pants on than that.
Welcome to the show. Singer songwriter from London.
Well, I live in London, from Wales originally. From South Wales, but yes, I live in Walthamstow, so on the London Essex fringes.
I love a little bit of Welsh, I do.
Oh, good for you.
Now, I went to school there for a while.
In Wales?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
A place called Whitchurch.
Oh, God, yes.
Just outside Cardiff.
I
go back every now and again, but Cardiff, what a city. It's done really... I mean, last time I went, they was taking on the football while Wembley was being built.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the area around there is completely...
It's very different. I mean, it's different now than how it was then. And they've... I slightly worry that they're... just turning it into a generic city centre, you know, because they've built amazing shops. The shops are brilliant in Cardiff now. But it's a little, slightly lost its character, you know, as happens to any sort of town when there's lots and lots of development. On the one side, it's good, and on the other side, it loses a bit of its history and heritage, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of Essex now, then? Because obviously, we've got Towie here, they come on tour.
Carp, anglers, wall to wall anglers.
If it's not people with orange faces, it's fish.
It's sometimes fish with orange faces.
They do tours. I mean, if you go through Britain, possibly later on, you'll see people, walking around tours, like they do in Hollywood, but in Brentwood. Rather bizarre.
The thing is, I really like Essex. I think it's really beautiful. I was thinking that as I was driving here this morning. My son is 7 years old, and he plays rugby for a club in Essex. And so pretty much every Sunday, I'm going to a different part of Essex. And I really like it. I think it's got... you know, a colourful reputation.
Yes.
Due to media coverage and TV programmes and that kind of thing. But I think it's very, very nice, very friendly.
And we've not got no snow, which is good. Let's get to the music, because for the listeners, how would you class your musical genre, as they call it?
I've always, ever since I was a kid, loved pop music. And for me, that's just... I love really beautiful melodies and... nice, short, concise, 3.5 minute kind of songs that sound good on the radio. I've sort of, over the years, I've moved in various different directions, but at the moment I'm playing with a three-piece band live, so it's piano, bass and drums. It sound a bit like Ben Folds. I also love songwriters like Neil Finn, Neil Young, The Beach Boys, that kind of stuff. So really classic, hopefully... timeless pop music.
Yeah, Beach Boys. I haven't heard them for ages.
They're still good. I saw them live last year. Obviously, you never know which Beach Boys are going to turn up if you go and see them live.
There's a band called
the Beach Boys, where none of the original members. But when I saw them, it was a proper... anyone who was still alive and still able to operate musical instruments
I saw Kool and the Gang once. And they was back in the 80s. It was they had a really big band. It was 10, 12 of them. And
pretty substantial gang.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But time they got to where I was going to see them, there was like, it's Kool and the Gang with two original members.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
The drummer.
Kool himself.
Yeah. So it's not quite the same band, but no. There you go. So what made you jump into music?
I've always loved music.
Just the passion, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can hardly think of a time in my life when it wasn't what I loved the most. And it just, I think it gives you a feeling... that you can't get anywhere else, really. It's whether that is, I mean, I love listening to music, and I'm a big music fan myself, or whether it's just the thrill of, you know, writing a song, coming up with an idea, you know, putting it together with a band, recording in the studio, playing live, all of that stuff is stuff that just gives you a buzz that, you know, I certainly haven't found through doing anything else. I've just always loved it.
Okay. Now, before we do some live stuff, let's talk about some of the music you've got out. You released a single, Downhill, back December 2013.
Yep.
It's taken from the album, Great Falls.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about the single and the album.
Single first, Downhill is a song about the moment in your life where things sort of turn from half full to half empty, where you suddenly realise, hang on a minute, maybe my glory days are behind me. I've obviously decided through the course of the song and through singing it live that they aren't behind me, but, you know, it's one of those things that occurs to you from time to time. And then the album, Great Falls, is, I hope, a really catchy collection of, you know, big pop tunes. I mean, it's you know, it's had some really good reviews, lots of acclaim, lots of good radio play. So I'm really delighted with how it went. It's a song sort of lyrically, the album's kind of about heroic failure, really. It's about, as I said, the moment when things go wrong and yet it all seems to go right.
Was that your? I'm taking a photo of you as you're
talking.
Oh,
thank you. That's
just
nice.
I'll tweet it out to everyone. Yeah. Was that your first album?
Yeah, I mean, I've made albums before. It's the first album to get a proper release. So I made an album a few years before that called The Fire Stairs, which I really love, but which I think only about 14 people have ever heard. it was a labour of love, and it really it was good in a way because I kind of drew a line through all the songs I'd kind of written. You know, from the moment I started writing songs to the moment I made it. And then after that, I could kind of start fresh and do some other stuff. But I really like it. Maybe one day it will get a release. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've been recording recently at the RAK Studios.
Yeah, RAK.
RAK.
Yeah, Miss Mickey Most's studios. It's a really delightful old kind of vintage place.
It looks great. I mean, I've seen the pictures on Facebook. You've been saying how good it was there. Looks like you're having lots of fun.
Always great fun.
Is this for work on a new album or new tracks?
Yeah, so we're about halfway through. We've recorded six tracks that are pretty much nearly finished, and then another six tracks which we've done bass and drums and piano for, and which we're going to come back and finish from mid-Feb. So I'm hoping to have a single out at some point in the spring and then for the album to be out in the summer.
Okay. It's untitled at the moment. It is untitled.
I was thinking as I was driving here today, should I think of a title on the way and premiere it on this show? But then I thought, I'm just going to end up, you know, reading a road sign and then saying no.
Turn left.
So it's, I'm afraid, yeah, turn left, exactly.
Welcome to
Brentwood. 6 miles. it has no name, but there's a few candidates, but none that I'm prepared to reveal just yet.
So tell me about the Spandau Ballet bit, because I every time I look on Facebook, there's a little thing about Spandau Ballet. You might call it something like that.
You have. It makes perfect sense now. I was looking at you thinking, what the hell is he talking about? I can't remember what the Spandau Ballet thing was, but
I've been stalking your Facebook.
Thank you. I appreciate it. At least someone's listening. There's a running joke with my band. I mean, I've played, as I said, with two other guys. The band itself doesn't have a name, so it's the project is me and my name. And we have a running joke pretty much every time we play that we're going to think of a new ridiculous band name. So we've come up with Gazpacho Balls. I like that one. Gazpacho Balls. What was the other one? Robot Napoleon. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. So we just keep coming up with ridiculous band names. None of these will ever stick. None of these will ever appear on an album. It is literally a way to childishly amuse ourselves.
They kind of sound like cocktails, don't they?
They do. They do a bit. The thing I'm always thinking about is the Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge, which is on BBC Two, and his house band had a different name for every show. So it was Glenn Ponder and Ferrari.
Uh-huh.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So it's inspired by that, but it really is just a joke.
Okay. Well, we're going to do a first track, a track of three that you're going to be singing live for us in the studio. What have you chosen for your first track?
So the first one I'm going to play is a song called Homes on Fire, which is a song inspired by, it's going to sound like a funny choice of words when I explain what it's inspired by the riots in London a few years ago. I read an interview with a young lad who had been one of the kids who'd, you know, busted into JD Sports or you know, whatever it was they were doing, like nicking tellies from Curry's. And this kid had been arrested, convicted and had actually served a small sentence. And they were interviewing him after the event, saying, "What, you know, what was it like to be involved?" And I think they expected to get this kind of hard luck story of, "Oh, you know, it was terrible, worst mistake I ever made." But all he could talk about was how exciting that time was in London. And he said, "No one will ever be able to tell me, no matter what's happened to me during or since, that that wasn't the most exciting night of my life." And I thought, actually, you know, sometimes we, when you talk about these kind of events, you talk about it as a, you know, what's gone wrong in that kid's life, or, you know, like, let's try and find 900 reasons why it happened, and that kind of stuff, you know, from, is it absent fathers? Is it the economy? Is it whatever? And I think that people ignore the fact that for young kids with nothing to do, that's really exciting. So I wanted to write a song about how exciting the riots were. I mean, obviously, for me personally, they weren't exciting. I saw some kids chuck a bollard through a shop window. That's about as exciting as I got, as it got, and I was driving away at top speed at the time in case they chucked a bollard at me. But for people who were involved, that was really exciting, and I thought, no one is singing that song, so that's what I want to do.
Okay. When you're ready, take it away.
Okay. thank you. One, the sound of one hand clapping.
Well, I'll use the other hand as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's two hands clapping.
I could have used them on my head, actually. Made it sound like two people.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, great sounding, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Love the song. And I must tell everyone about it, because you will. So I've just tweeted a photo of you on Twitter.
Oh, that's very
by
nice.
The way. If you're not following us, mine is at DJ Tony Sat, and Reese's is...
Rhys Williams 2. So Rhys is R-H-Y-S, the Welsh spelling, R-H-Y-S Williams 2, the number 2.
And we've just tweeted him out, because you're playing keyboards live. That's not a backing track. He's live session in the studio. And when Rhys turned up at the studio, he brought in what seemed to be like a... it looked like he was going skiing or something.
Yeah, it's a monster.
It is a monster keyboard.
It's a big beast.
And it sounds fantastic.
Brilliant.
I would have gone with the small one.
Yeah, well, I've actually got a little mini-me up here, which live you can plumb into the laptop, which plays organs and strings and what have you.
So that's like a mini-synth, is it?
Yeah, well, it's because, I'll tell you what, because I like to say, small band, no guitars, no nothing. So to make a big sound, you need to have, as well as having the piano, you need to have things like organs and strings and what have you. And I used to have two keyboards. I used to have another big one on top of this one, but I always felt like the kind of guy who might be playing in a band at Butlin's, you know, is that kind of... It's a bit of a cabaret look.
Yes.
So I just thought, get it out of the way, get it on this tiny little keyboard here. And I sold a keyboard that was worth about £1,200, and I bought this one for £30, and it's actually much better.
So as a non-keyboard player, what is the idea of the second keyboard? Is one bass and one's...
No, this is just... So
you can have a...
This is piano, basically. So the big one is a piano, and then this little one here does... organs, strings, anything else that we need.
And that's a full keyboard, isn't it?
The piano is, yeah, and this one here. And this one is so light, it's practically hollow, and it's really titchy. So I have to... it's got really tiny keys, so I have to be very careful not to hit the wrong ones, whereas this one effectively plays like a real piano.
Yeah. Now, you've recorded at Abbey Road.
Yes.
Sung at the Albert Hall.
Twice.
Pretty good. Tell us about that.
Amazing. Well, Abbey Road first. So I... write with a singer called Sian Cross, who's making her debut album at the moment. And we recorded some tracks at Abbey Road because she knew an engineer who worked there. And the engineers who work there can get downtime. So if the studio is not being used, then you can get in and record. Obviously, it means if someone wants to come in and use it, they bump you. So we were due to record in Studio One, which I think is like one of the largest recording studios in the world. And we got, I mean, when I say largest, I mean, it's like a cathedral. It's enormous. And we were bumped out of there because they wanted to record the soundtrack to Toy Story 3, which is, I think, is quite funny being, you know, gazumped by Buzz Lightyear.
yes.
But I've recorded at Studio 2, which is where the Beatles did a load of their stuff, and then Studio 3 as well, which I think is that they made Dark Side of the Moon and various other big albums.
Yes, they did, yes.
And I just think it's a place where it's impossible to fail. You know, you can't... no one ever turns up to Abbey Road and is rubbish, because there's something just in the bricks that make you 20% better. Yeah. Everything sounds brilliant there because, of course, they've got loads of fantastic equipment, and the studio itself is very, very well built. But I think there's just something sort of magic about the fact that it's Abbey Road. The Albert Hall, and this is another weird story, but I sang in a scratch gospel choir. So there was a gospel choir that was put together for two charity gigs, two successive years, and they got a group of session singers together to effectively to do this. And I felt completely out of place, as I was the token white atheist in a largely speaking black Christian choir. So it was a bit strange to be the only sort of heathen in the village. But nevertheless, if someone says, would you like to sing at Albert Hall in front of 5,500 people, you go, yes, please.
Absolutely. You just bite their arm off, wouldn't you?
Yeah, dead right.
Now, lots of guests have worked with, you know, all sorts of artists. I usually, when I do the research, I come up with all the different people.
At least you do some research, and not everyone does.
And I've noticed you work with, and I'm going to give you a clue. Yeah. Rock on, Tommy! Rock on, Tommy!
It's brilliant. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
For those who don't know, it is...
Cannonball.
Absolutely.
Okay, wow, you really have like dug up all the really terrible things about me. So this is when I was a kid. And in fact, you know, you mentioned someone who tweeted you earlier whose Twitter name is Jim Will Mix It.
Yes.
So Jim, if Jim is listening, Jim was also did this gig with me. So I was 16 and we had a band at school and we had a gig at a sort of, what was it, like a cabaret club in the middle of nowhere in Wales. And we were first on the bill, and last on the bill were Tommy Cannon and Bobby Ball. So it was, as you can imagine, the worst possible combination, where the crowd had really no idea. We were there sort of playing our earnest teenage songs that sounded a bit like The Cure. And then after us came Cannon and Ball, who were at the time big stars on the telly. So it was a very, very strange gig. Almost totally disastrous, but actually, in the end, a great experience. And believe it or not, many years later, here I am talking about it on the radio.
It sounds like fun.
It was good fun. And we stole Bobby Ball's rubber chicken.
oh, yeah, because
we stole Bobby Ball's rubber chicken. Bobby, if you're listening, I'm really sorry. We were teenage boys. We were full of the joys of spring, and we felt we needed a memento, and we took your rubber chicken. If you're worrying about what happened to it, it was us.
It's gone to a good home.
Well, God knows where it is now. I think it's in the big, the great chicken coop in the sky.
If you could collaborate with, I know this is back to one of the radio questions now. No doubt, everyone will ask you. But if you could collaborate with an artist, young or old, gone or still here, or who would you pick?
Oh, wow, God, who wouldn't I pick? I mean, when I think about that, if I could play with a band, so if I could play in a band, I'd like to play in Led Zeppelin. I think I'd really spoil it with my sort of sensitive white piano playing, but I would love to play with that rhythm section, John Paul Jones and John Bonham. If I could write with a songwriter, I mentioned Neil Finn earlier. I really love Neil Finn. I think Paul McCartney is an obvious one where, you know, I would love to write with someone like him. The other one who I really love, who not everyone will have heard of, but is, believe it or not, the third most successful songwriter in history after John Lennon and Paul McCartney. And it's a guy called Max Martin, mm-hmm. who has produced Jesse J, Katy Perry, Taylor Swift, and I mean, a list as long as your arm of massive. I think he's had like 18 or 19 number ones with loads of different artists. And I would love to have a chance to work with someone like that, just to see, could he bring something different out of me that I wouldn't find by myself.
Yeah. Right, time for another track. This is going to be track two. What have you got in store for us now?
This is called Come Outside, and it's been a funny old couple of years for me. I gave up drinking, which
just for January or full time?
No, I did initially just for January. Ended up doing 2 years, and it's just over 2 years now of me not drinking. And just by way of explanation, before that, I was king of the drinkers. I was very much their leader, and I certainly left nothing in the locker when it came to going out and enjoying myself. So having stopped for various reasons, it sort of makes you rethink yourself, rethink the kind of person you are and everything like that. And then, so this is a song really, it's sort of dedicated to the kind of closing months and years of me being a party animal. Because it's a song about the morning after and how strange it can be if you know up all night and then you find yourself a bit confused in Tesco Metro with a bunch of people who are going to work.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like my weekends, most
week. Well, it sounds like many people's weekends. it's a universal thing that hopefully lots of people can identify with, that feeling of dread. What on earth have I done the night before?
Please, lovely.
Yes,
take right. It away.
Are the bottles
are still hanging from the night before. They're my light and heat. When the world is cold and bleak, they're my family. The voice coming from the street, come outside.
Sunday Lunch with your favourite Essex boy, Tony Smith. Tony Smith. On Phoenix 98 FM.
Whether it's a new logo, website, mobile creative app, or marketing your business, our goal at GT Creative Studio is to provide you with a creative solution built to suit your needs and your budget. For over 10 years, we've specialised in web design and brand development and provided award-winning creative services to hundreds of local businesses. GT Creative Studio, High Street, Brentwood, winners of Essex Digital Awards 2014. For a free consultation, call us on 01277 849 161 or check out our portfolio at gtcreativestudio.co.uk.
Let's get fit for 2015. There's no better way than the mud-crawling, heart-pounding, adrenaline-bursting, mind-challenging, obstacle-crazy Mud and Madness. It's on Saturday, the 7th of February, in Upminster, an assault course 7.5 kilometres long. Sign up now at sfh.org.uk. St Francis Hospice, providing care free of charge for local people affected by a life-limiting illness.
There are times in your life when you'll need a solicitor. Here at DPP Law, we can help you with criminal, family, mediation, personal injury, and mental health matters. Whatever you need help with, your solution starts with a phone call. Call DPP Law today on 0800 027 7870. DPP Law, Brentwood. We're on your doorstep and we're on your side.
I love Michelle on Phoenix FM.
G.
join me, Michelle Ward, for Eat My Brunch, weekdays from 10 through till 1.
Shall I turn your microphone up?
Well, it would help, yes.
Well, it wouldn't, really.
With music, guests, topical news stories and my general ramblings.
God, your voice is really loud.
Sorry.
You're not even near the microphone.
Plus my question of the day.
What is it? What is it?
You keep asking for requests. I've told you before, I don't like people asking for requests.
Brought to you in association with Chigwell Byfold Doors and Windows. Visit chigwellbyfolddoors.co.uk.
Is that a marshmallow I can smell burning?
Phoenix FM Events Guide.
Great little event coming up from the 12th of February to the 14th of February. The Vicar of Dibley, starting at 19:45. It's organised by the Thurrock Court Players, Thameside Theatre, which is in Allsitt Road in Grays. A delightful comedy about the goings-on of the Vicar village of Dibley. It was on TV, do you remember it? With its mad committee and new vicar. Phoenix FM's own Mike Jones plays the part of sex star farmer Owen Newitt. Costs £12, concessions £10. All the details, including links to the website, are on Phoenix FM under the events guide. Here's your details.
For more details about these events and many more happening in your local area, go to phoenixfm.com and click on events guide.
Phoenix FM travel news in association with the Beaches Care and Nursing Home, London Road, Brentwood.
Not looking too bad locally. This is just in on High Road, Chadwell Heath. An accident there. That's where it meets the A124 Wood Lane, Beckertree, but only marked up as minor, not causing too many problems. Over on the underground, quite a lot of disruptions today, mainly due to the engineering works. Central line, severe. That's Tottenham Court Road due to engineering works. Service suspended, central line between White City and Ealing Broadway on the Circle Line. Jubilee Line, service suspended. Jubilee Line, Waterloo and Finchley, again due to engineering works. DLR at the moment, service suspended at Docklands Light Railway. That's between Canning Town and Beckton due to ongoing engineering works. Over on the Overground, it's looking like this. Service suspended on the London Overground between Gospel Oak and Stratford due to today's ongoing engineering works. At 1:45, that is your traffic and travel.
The Beaches. Last few remaining apartments available with your own private patio. Call in and find out more. The Beaches, London Road, Brentwood.
Sunday Lunch. Sunday Lunch with your favourite Essex boy, Tony Smith. Tony Smith. On Phoenix 98 FM.
Not really their favourite Essex boy, you know.
Not everyone can have the same favourite Essex boy, can they?
No, everyone's got their own one.
It's many people's favourite, I'm sure.
I know. Right, now, this is something I've got. I do love searching around on Facebook and trying to get as much information as I can. I'll put this
out. I feel like consumed with dread now. What is this going to be?
Well, I'm not going to read it, because I did put it on Facebook to promote you coming on. So here we go. That's like a little voiceover.
Yes.
Now, many have claimed to fame, and this is pretty cool, as you were perhaps best known as the third most famous flutist in popular music history, having supplied a one-minute flute solo to Morrissey's You Are the Quarry album in 2004. Wow.
Yeah, do you know what? I actually can relax now, because it could have been a lot worse than that. So, no, that's true. That's true. So, 2004, which is unbelievably... Well, it's nearly 11 years ago now that I did it. I have a friend who is Morrissey's guitarist, who said they needed some flute on a Morrissey album, and... I played the flute at school.
Well, that's just lucky enough you do, because otherwise you'd be rather stuff.
Well, therein lies the tale, because I hadn't played the flute for years. I picked up the flute because there was an all-girl flute section in the school orchestra, so I thought it was the closest way to put myself right in amongst as many girls as possible in the orchestra.
Does that take you down to... is that a flute in your pocket, Joe?
Well, yeah, okay, I'll let you say that. I take a dim view of jokes like that, just to let you know. No, but the... that's how I came to play the flute in the first place. And then I didn't play it for years and years. And he said, oh, you play the flute, don't you? Do you want to come and do it? And of course, again, it's like someone saying, do you want to go and sing at the Albert Hall? You just go, yeah. And it was only after I put the phone down that I thought, hang on a minute, I can't really play the flute. This is going to be a disaster. So I bought myself a book, Teach Yourself the Flute, grades 1 to 6, and practiced every day for 8 hours for a month. And then did the session and then did some live dates. So I got to play it. Places like the MEN Arena in front of 20,000 people, which was really very exciting.
Do you think, when you go out, I mean, obviously the flute's a lot easier to carry around than...
It is. It's practically weightless.
And you get less jokes from me about it as well. I mean, because...
Although, you know, you made a joke about the piano as well, Tony, so... No, it's fine. To be honest, it's... I joke about being the third most famous flautist in popular music history. You could probably only name three. So I might just put down the least famous flautist in popular music.
In fact, I couldn't even name one.
James Galway, the dude out of Jethro Tull. Mm-hmm. That's it, and me.
What?
And I'm amazed that those two guys didn't get the call for the Morrissey gig. You know, obviously they must have been unavailable.
On that instrument, going back to the flute. Yeah. Is the flute based on like saxophone? If you play the flute, can you move to another instrument?
I don't think so. No. Well, I mean, I've never tried. No. Saxophone, the sort of reed instruments. So you've got saxophone and clarinet quite closely related. So I think you could probably flute's go between different. Those things, like the bassoon, the oboe. You know, those instruments are all sort of related, whereas the flute is its own thing. I think I don't know. I mean, it's not even like the recorder or anything like that. It's different. It's quite hard, the flute. It's got a lot of keys. What can I say?
You don't see them around much nowadays.
No, you don't.
I think the last time I see someone, it was on Opportunity Knocks.
Blimey, you're showing your age there.
Yeah, I know. Right, swiftly moving on.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about earlier on about the group.
Yeah.
I'll just move back to it quickly, because when you gig, you play with a group.
Yes.
The group with no name, as they called it. Who's in the group and who does what? Let's say hello to them.
So, okay, let's say hello to them, just in case they're listening. So, on the drums is a guy called Sam Stopford, who is a superstar drummer and often commented on as the star of the show when I play, which, as you can imagine, I have to have quite a small ego to be able to take that kind of comment. But no, he's brilliant, a really great guy and fantastic on the drums, a real amazing performer. There's a guy called Mark Ferguson, who I think is Britain's tallest man. He's about 11 feet tall, of Anglo-Irish descent. In fact, he's probably just Irish descent. And then backing vocals, the artist I mentioned earlier who I write songs with, called Sean Cross, she often joins us for backing vocals. So it's just really been a settled sort of lineup for the last 4 or 5 years, and I love it. And so, having been in many bands over the years, it's the most band-like band I've ever been in, even though it's a solo project.
What is coming up for you for this year? If people want to catch you gigging at the moment...
At the moment, there's no gigs booked at the moment, because we are in the middle of recording. So I don't really want to play live until I finish doing that. But I imagine we will be playing live in London around about April, and then around the country kind of June, July-ish.
Because you've got a website where you can find a lot of this information.
Yeah, I mean, the best place to look at the moment, because the website, I'm afraid, is one of those websites that was last updated in the mid-90s. So the best place to look if you want news is on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Rhys Williams Music. So that's R-H-Y-S. Williams
and
music,
and that's where I kind of caught most of
That's where all this kind of stuff goes on. And I one of my New Year's resolutions for 2015 is to be less lazy with the website. So I'm sure by the time people check it out, it will be different. But if people are looking today, they should look at the Facebook page.
And before we wrap it up with another tune, let's just talk through the songwriting, because earlier on you was talking about one of the songs you've written and how you got to writing that. Are a lot of your songs based on, you know, real life experiences? I mean, with a keyboard player in particular, playing the keyboard, do you kind of do a melody and then put your words to it, or do you do words and then try and write around that?
Well, there's two questions in there, so let me answer. I'll answer the second one first, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. So, always music first. So, on my phone, if you were to take a delve through the voice memos on my iPhone, every single day, without fail, there's a different melody comes to me. So I've got a stash of about 200, 300 melodies at any one time. And sometimes they come with nonsense words. So I'll just be sort of scatting along with a tune I've got in my head. Sometimes they come with an actual phrase that still sticks in the song, you know, months later. And then mostly then I write lyrics afterwards based on that original kind of scat. And I find writing melodies really easy. I find writing lyrics really difficult. That tends to be the bit of the process that's really sort of long drawn out. I always want to try and make them meaningful, even though sometimes I think my songs are a little bit, you know, you have to really, really listen and really think about them to try and work out what's going on in the songs, because I tend to kind of disguise things quite a lot. They're always based on someone's real life experience. Not always mine, but quite often, you know, it'll be things I've, like, for instance, that song I said earlier, where it was inspired by an interview I'd read in the paper. That quite a lot of that sort of thing happens, where it's something I've heard about in the news or read about. I'd say this album coming up will be the most personal and the most autobiographical thing I've ever done, just because I wanted to write songs that were really, really honest and really true and not kind of hide behind characters or be writing in the third person. So this is, you know, as close as you'll ever get to understanding me and what I'm about.
Okay, right. Let's get on to your last track. What's your last track?
This last track is probably the most personal song I've ever written. I lost my mum this time last year, March, and this is a song about just those times. It's called Long After the Light.
Okay, take it away.
If today is not the end, then how bad will things be then? A hymn sung on a hillside, a cold you can't imagine. There's a Bible by bed, but your eyes won't let you rest. Hold on to your last breath for an hour and we'll be there. Coming to show you you're not alone. This is where it starts from. Trees in the shade turn silver and gray after all the light has gone. Do you want to stop the world? Throw the days into
I didn't want to stop it. I was just letting the tone of the piano just like fade out.
Oh, thank you.
It's like I could talk to you all day, but sadly the time has got
someone's outside.
Waiting to come in. Listen, before we go, let's just run through. You can catch on Twitter.
Yes, Rhys Williams 2. So that's RHYS Williams 2, the number 2.
And Facebook
is facebook.com/Rhys Williams Music.
Okay, great stuff. Well, I shall be putting this up if you missed the interview. Now, a few people have tweeted in saying, can we listen to the interview again? And the answer is absolutely yes, you can. I will be writing up. We've been taking some video. We'll be putting the live tracks up separately as well as the whole interview. So if you want to listen to the tracks again, rather than just listen to the whole interview again, you can choose what audio you want. And you'll find all that on phoenixfm.com under the Sunday Lunch Show. From tomorrow, once I've written it up. So thanks for joining me, Reese.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely great having you on the show. And thanks for staying with us and tuning into Phoenix FM. Steph's up next. Steph Soundwave.